Blog Talk Radio.
We hope to be back on a regular time come Friday and next Monday. Among the events on January 16th, 1547, Ivan the Terrible, Ivan Grozich, crowns himself. He wasn't the first one, and he certainly isn't the last one, or wasn't the last one to crown himself czar, king, emperor. 1581, the English Parliament passed laws against Catholics and Catholicism. In 1759, the British Museum opens, and if you're ever in London, this is a must-see. A lot of history there, and reportedly, it has Obama's father's records, because Obama's father was born in Kenya, and at the time of Obama's birth, Kenya was a British colony. So there's some, according to sources, that's where some of the information is. And, of course, none of the major press brought this up, but it's on the web. An Orly Talib suit questioning Obama's eligibility to be Presidente is going to be heard before the nine justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. It's going to be very interesting how this goes, since two of them have been appointed by Mr. O. In 1776, the Continental Congress approved the enlistment of free blacks, and there were free blacks. In fact, the first person killed in the, or certainly one of the earliest battles of the Revolutionary War, was a black in Boston when the British fired on Bostonians. In 1865, General Sherman, who actually did not like blacks, he issued Order Number 15, which gave lands to blacks who were freed by the Union Army's campaign. And I highly recommend you see the movie Lincoln, the latest. We'll be doing something special in February. I'm discussing it today with Lincoln expert Patrick Butler, who, when we were both younger, we dated, double dated, and he dated the grandniece of Mary Todd Lincoln, and there was insanity in that family. In fact, all of the Todds down through the lines had mental problems. It's sad, we sadly note, but that was the reality. And it is said that Mary Todd Lincoln may have picked up gonorrhea, so we don't know, but that's a speculation. And her son Robert, her eldest, had her, I believe, institutionalized. But see the movie Lincoln. It's a real bravura performance by Daniel Day-Lewis, who is Irish, probably of Jewish heritage. We'll get into that another day. In 1868, this is very important because this really gave the meatpacking industry its biggest impetus. The refrigerator car was patented by a guy named Bainbridge. I can't read his last name. Anyway, he was a Detroit fish guy, and when the refrigerator car became available, when they were manufacturing them, the major meat packers, Swift, Armour, Cudahy, all these people were able to use slaughter animals and put them their carcasses in refrigerator cars and bringing them by rail to markets. And of course, the big stock market, stockyards in America at the time was the Chicago stockyards. In fact, I remember you could smell it, and they call it back of the yards. That's the term used in Chicago about the old stockyards. And then it closed down after 100 years, and they started to slaughter animals in Omaha. So I don't know what's happening since. Maybe they've turned it all into industrial land. In 1870, Virginia became the eighth state readmitted to the Union. In 1913, the British House of Commons approved home rule for Ireland, but it was still a bloody fight. A lot of horrible things happened by the blacks and tans. And a great movie to see on, and very accurate about that period of Irish history, see the movie Michael Collins. It's on disc now. Another British explorer, Shackleton, discovered the magnetic South Pole in this date. This is an infamous day in American history. In 1919, while the American youths were over in France fighting, they were in the army, the crazies, women, Carrie Nation in that crowd, got prohibition passed through Congress and ratified by three-fourths of the states. Nebraska was the final state to ratify. And 1920, prohibition became law, and this ushered in one of the most law-breaking, raucous, racketeering periods in American history, and we're still suffering from it. As far as alcohol, in fact, a lot of the rest of the drinking world, the French, the British, the Canadians, thought it was appalling that Americans would be denied a drink. And in fact, the Canadians, Al Capone used to have his liquor brought in from Canada, I think through Detroit, and of course through some of the border states and which bordered the Canadian provinces. And of course, Americans could cross the border, the American-Canadian border, to get a drink in Canada. In 1925, Leon Trotsky was deposed in Russia. He was for kind of bourgeois communism, and Stalin's agents tracked him all over the world, terrorized him, tried to assassinate him. They finally succeeded in 1940 in Mexico City, where a guy, Mercader, I guess that was the name he used, wormed his way into Trotsky's confidence, and he mortally wounded Trotsky with, a pickaxe. And Mercader about 10 years ago, got out of a Mexican prison because they didn't have capital punishment, and he presumably went back to Russia. We don't know what happened to him once he got back there. Trotsky's grandnephew was a guy named Bronstein, Phil Bronstein, who later became editor of the old Hearst San Francisco Examiner. He's no longer there. Getting back to the communists, in 1936, the Spanish Popular Front was formed with communists and anarchists, and that precipitated the Spanish Civil War, which General Francisco Franco won. Now, it is said that Francisco Franco had Jewish heritage. We don't know. We'll check on that. In 1941, we're right in the war. The War Department, as it was called then, it's now called the U.S. Department of Defense. The War Department formed the first black air cadet program, later became the Tuskegee Flyers. And there's this movie out, it's two of them. One is the Tuskegee about them, and the other one is the Red Tail, which I understand was kind of a dog. And also in early 1941, around March, Admiral Bellinger, he was a rear admiral then, was a naval aviation expert. He warned of a Pearl Harbor attack on Pearl Harbor by the Japanese using aircraft carriers, which would be about 300 miles away. And Gordon Prage, in his book At Dawn We Slept, he came to Western Public Radio for an interview. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to talk to him. He was right on target, and Bellinger was a distinguished, little-known U.S. naval aviation expert. Also, General Martin of the Army also warned. He was the Army's air commander in Hawaii. He also warned that he concurred with Bellinger there was going to be a Japanese attack. And, of course, General Billy Mitchell had warned about this in the Carlin Coolidge administration, and he got court-martialed and drummed out of the Army. In 1942, a Danish immigrant came here legally. William Knudsen became the first civilian to be appointed as a general in the Army, as a lieutenant general. Now, the reason Knudsen was appointed a lieutenant general was because he was the country's automobile mass production expert. He worked at Ford and at General Motors and later ran General Motors. In 1961, and Richard Nixon talks about this when he talks about Jew and black spies, that's his words, the British intelligence discovered there was a Russian spy ring with people like Klaus Fuchs, and which was operating in Britain, and with the aid of Burgess and McLean and Philby, connected to the communist spy ring in America, the Rosenbergs, Harry Greenglass, and that crowd. We're going to play that little clip from Nixon on this topic.
I was just here, of course, but there was this strange malignancy in all of it. It seems to creep among them. I don't know, radicalism. I can imagine how the fact that Ellsberg is in this must really tear up all my candidate pieces or garment. Just like the Rosenbergs and all that. That just has to come. You feel horrible about it.
Couldn't be a guy by name of Smith.
Right.
It is right. It's always an Ellsberg or
Rosenberg. Everyone's a Jew. Ellsberg, Rosenberg. But there are bad. This was not a Jew. So that proves something. Very interesting thing. So few of those who engage in espionage are Negroes. Very lucky that way. And good. Let's see, as a matter of fact, very few of them become communists. If they do, they even like they get in the Angela Davis. They're more of the activist type. And they throw bombs, this and that. But the Negroes, have you ever noticed? They're grand you Negro spies.
They're not intellectual enough. Not smart enough.
It may be not smart enough to be spies. The Jews are intellectual enough. The Jews are born spies. You know somebody they just get it up to their necks.
You know, kind of basic deviousness.
Well, also an arrogance. An arrogance. That's what makes us. That's
you
what
know.
Makes us. He puts himself above the law.
Yeah.
I, other than the spies that pay, I'm talking about the spies that do it because of ideals.
Now, that was Richard Nixon in one of his White House tapes that were later released, and some interesting things about what he said, but it was true that there was a Russian spy ring that he refers to that was operating in Britain. Klaus Fuchs was an East German, I believe Jewish heritage, probably one of the who fallen away, and he was involved in spying. And, of course, the Rosenbergs over here in the United States, and it is said that Mrs. Rosenberg really didn't know what was going on. She just typed up the atom bomb information. And Harry Greengrass, I think it was her brother, worked out at Los Alamos, and he was turning over classified material to Rosenberg's husband, her husband. And they were executed. The Pope, a lot of people had petitioned President Truman to grant them life imprisonment. but he wouldn't budge. And, of course, the way it's very interesting how the case was prosecuted. The U.S. Justice Department at the time used everybody of Jewish heritage, the judge, the prosecutor, Roy Cohn, who later died of AIDS, incidentally. And he, his famous statement was, "Don't tell me about the case, tell me who the judge is." So he was involved. And the defense lawyer was also of Jewish heritage. It's very interesting how they worked that. And they, the Justice Department did the same thing a little differently with Rose Taguri, allegedly the only Japanese-American who was broadcasting from Tokyo to American servicemen in World War II, and she was accused of treason by the Hearst papers. I had met her after she got out of prison and investigated her case independently. So she ended up in Chicago setting up Taguri Japanese Goods, and she died several years ago. She just accepted her fate, 10-year fine. What had happened was when the Americans landed in Tokyo, everybody was looking for Tokyo Rose. What they didn't know, that there were 20 girls, and an Australian and an American, who were also doing the same broadcasting. But she happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Justice Department at that time felt they had a weak case and didn't want to prosecute her, but it was the racist at the Hearst papers who beat the drums and got everybody all upset through lies and everything. So Tokyo Rose, Rose Diakino, who had been born in America, went to UCLA, graduated, got caught in Japan at the beginning of the war, and was told, if you don't broadcast, you will be sent to a concentration camp. So she was 20 years old, so what's she going to do? Anyway, she took the fall. Now, the rule at the time, and I think it's still a rule of jurisdiction, that when an American commits treason against the United States, when they're apprehended, if and when they're apprehended, they have to be brought to the nearest United States District Court jurisdiction. That would have been Hawaii. However, some devious dude in the Justice Department thought, well, there's too many Japanese, Hawaiians of Japanese ancestry and Asian ancestry, and she'll be acquitted. So what did they do? They brought her to San Francisco where they had a kangaroo court jury. Interestingly, the judge himself was an immigrant from Ireland, very similar to the Steve Neri case where the judge, Ryan, was, I don't know if he's legal, there's this debate, because he lied about it on his political campaign literature. He was an immigrant from Alberta, Canada. So we don't know how, when, and why he even came here, but that's another story. That's how that went. Now, during World War II, let me get some more of these interesting dates here. In 1970, Colonel Gaddafi, who was just brutally murdered or assassinated, set himself up as the premier of Libya. And it's according to some sources, it wasn't Gaddafi's people that bombed that Pan Am jet over Lockerbie. It was the Muslim Brotherhood. But Gaddafi took the fall in more ways than one. In 1979, Shah, who was another one who crowned himself, a light of the Aryans and all of that, Pahlavi, fled Iran, and he went to Egypt, where he was welcomed by Assad, and not Assad, but the former Egyptian president. Then he went to the United States, and he was treated for cancer. In 1990, the Bank of Credit Commerce International, BCCI, two of their bank members pleaded guilty to money laundering. Now, they had a connection here in San Francisco, two connections, which I discovered investigating, of all things, probate. So we'll get into that another day. Among the interesting birthdays today, in 1853, the famous tire maker and the restaurant guide, Andre Michelin, was born today. Great actor, Harry Carey Sr., born this day. Guy who played, he had an unusual voice, very Canadian. Alexander Knox, who was born in Canada. He got an Academy Award for playing Wilson in the 1940s film, Ethel Merman with that brassy voice. Everything's coming, not everything's coming up roses, but anything goes. Another World War II naval aviator hero, David McCampbell, shot down 34 Jap planes. We have Eduardo Frei. He was the first freely elected Chilean politician to become president of Chile after Pinochet departed. Kathy Gerardo, who was born on this day, she was involved with Marlon Brando, Mexican actress. L.R. Lowenstein, one of the founders of SDS, Students for Democratic Society, he was also a gay. He was born on this day, and also, of course, the radicalism of SDS and all the problems they caused. Contrast that with Norman Podhoretz, who's a conservative journalist and newspaper, magazine publisher, excuse me. Dion Fossey, who is an animal protector of apes, her birthday. Another writer, Susan Sontag. Great mezzo-soprano. She lives here in San Francisco. She was married to a black conductor named Henry Lewis. He cut a few records. Played the string bass, I think, too, and was conductor of the New Jersey Symphony. Marilyn Horn, her birthday today. And then for all you car racing aficionados, A.J. Foyt, it's his birthday today. Among the deaths, we have Edward Gibbon, who wrote The Fall of the Roman Empire. Ironically, he fell on his head and died. Anton Schindler, who was Beethoven's biographer, and the great Arturo Toscanini. We're going to play how he used music for the Office of War Information. And he was opposed to fascism after Hitler came to power. He refused to conduct in Bayreuth. He refused to conduct the Italian fascist anthem, and he refused to conduct in Italy, and he didn't return until Mussolini had been and the Axis had been defeated. But here is the Hymn of Nations, which he put together. He was a great musician for the film Why We Fight, or that whole series put out by our propaganda department. Now here's Toscanini conducting the Hymn of Nations. We'll play the rest on Friday. The other deaths today, Bob Jones, who founded the conservative Bob Jones University, Pierre Boulez, who was a screenwriter for the film Vertigo, which is set here, done here, directed and produced here in San Francisco by Alfred Hitchcock, starring Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak, Marilyn Kim Novak. Marilyn Kim Novak and I had the same speech teacher many years ago. And I used to sit in her seat, and I had Professor Dolly Tharnsom, and one day she got mad at me, or irritated at me, and said, I can remember where Kim Novak sits where Peter is sitting today. And I said, my, how she's grown. And Dolly didn't appreciate my rather raucous comment. But she did finally give me an A. She said I was an A student for four of her classes, but I was lazy in the beginning. And finally, Bernard Lee, who played M in the James Bond films. He died on this date. And we'll end. We'll be back Friday at our usual time, 4 o'clock. I hope we don't have any problems with our web server, but we've been having problems all day with that. So we'll end with the theme, which is very appropriate to Abe Lincoln. I don't know if he played poker, but he was one hell of a shrewd politician who knew how to manipulate Weedle and twist arms to get what he wanted and easily got what he wanted. So here is an appropriate thing to all politicians, politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you 5. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Fine.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Bet 'em.
Little trades, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your 5.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, play for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, running neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average
Or hopefully there'll be no more web trouble. So good night and keep warm. And also we will have that interview with the Prime Minister of New Zealand talking about a Prime Minister's prescription for a cold. It's quite interesting. Good night.